Hello, and welcome to the Clock and Talk, an Arsenal podcast. It's me today, Schwinn, to play your host, and I'm joined by Tony. Tony, how are you doing?
Yeah, I've been better, as we're going to go into in a minute, but a lot of things have been put into perspective.
Yeah, you can say that again, certainly. And since Tez is missing, we also have Darren joining us. How are you doing, Darren?
Good afternoon. Yeah, good. Yeah, as Tony just said, you know, there's going to be a lot of moaning, I think, today. But the news that I think you're going to share has put things into perspective a bit today.
Yeah, for everyone who doesn't quite know what we're talking about, our host, Tez, has, you know, I mean, I really don't know what's the best way to say it, but is really struggling and is fighting for his life right now. His family is, of course, with him by his side as he battles. And from every indication, Tez is pulling through, defying the odds, as we know he does. On the podcast, we've seen him being completely brazen and speaking his mind. And be assured that he is telling all his ailments exactly how he feels about them. For everyone who wishes to contribute, support, there's a GoFundMe page that you can find on our Twitter. Feel free to share that with your friends, with anyone that you think can offer him a prayer even, and just support, keep him in your thoughts. He's really struggling, and you know, it's been great, the sort of response we've gotten so far. We've just started sharing this news today with everyone, and you know, despite all the nonsense that we witnessed yesterday, it's really good to see the community sort of get together and offer to help in whichever way they could. Tony, you've of course you know, been at the forefront of that, speaking with people and sharing what's going on. Tell me what sort of feedback you've gotten so far.
Yeah, I'm amazed by the feedback and how willing everyone is to help. I was saying to people yesterday that in reality, he's a guy, especially for me and for you and for all of us, that he's a guy over the other side of the world that I've never met, probably never will meet. 2 years ago, didn't know what a Tez was. And now he's someone that we WhatsApp every day. We speak not only about football. I mean, obviously, people may from the outside think we just turn the mics on and talk about football, but we have multiple group chats where we speak to him every day and really feel like we've got to know each other. So I was saying that the internet has brought many evils, but it's also brought many positives, and I'm so glad to see that the amount of people, some people who you would even, look, let's be honest, this podcast has had a lot to say about Arsenal Fan TV in the past. Today they retweeted the GoFundMe page. So yeah, we may disagree about football and sometimes we may not like other people and what they say, but it's been really good to see the community come together and support what is just who is a great bloke.
That's exactly it. You know, certain things transcend football as much as we may not speak about those on a weekly basis, but the support really has been overwhelming. And if Tez was here to see all this, I'm sure he would be overwhelmed. And I'm hoping he will be at some point back on the show to see what sort of support he got and really how the community banded together. So for everyone, once again, just get on our Twitter at clockend_talk and see what's going on there. All the links are there. Our DMs are open if you have any questions and any other ways you could support his family. And yeah, any other questions you might have, we'll be happy to answer them.
Can I just add, so obviously we have the Patreon podcast, which people have been paying for, and the idea was to raffle off, basically win a prize of an Arsenal shirt once we made enough. I have spoke to as many as I could think of the people that had donated and asked if they would mind if instead of doing a prize, if we donated it to the GoFundMe page. All that I've spoke to so far have said yes. Some people obviously haven't spoke to yet. If you don't want that to be the case, don't feel like it makes you a bad person or whatever, but just message me and say, look, that's not what that money was identified for, and we'll refund you. As I said, don't feel bad if that's your case, because we all have different reasons for what our money go for. But please do DM me and tell me, because at the moment we've kind of earmarked that money for
Tez's
cause.
Absolutely. And look, despite all this, it should be said that we are not here despite Tez. We are here on the podcast today because of Tez. So the show must go on. And as Tony, you said earlier today, that Tez wouldn't want to come back to an inactive show. He'd want to see us going on, talking about what we do every week. And that's exactly what we're here to do. So let's get on with it. We've spoken enough about this. And let's talk about the game. Let's start with the lineup. What were your feelings coming into the game? Of course, you knew beforehand that Ozil and Ceballos were going to start.
Yeah, so my friend who, I mean, I can't overly say his job, but he gives me team news early. And yesterday he actually didn't give me the full team, but he gave me the highlights of the it was Ozil and Ceballos both starting. And even just with that information, I couldn't really figure out how we was going to play. I couldn't see a system that fitted them both in. Once the full team news came out, I understood what he was trying to do. It was pretty clear he'd played at that same sort of diamond he did against Liverpool. I can't say I was best pleased with it, to be honest, because Pepe's naturally going to drift out to the right, and then it leaves off with no width on the left, or it leaves us completely, it just leaves us massively unbalanced. I don't think that formation is ever going to work. I had pu huge problems with it against Liverpool. I had problems with it again yesterday. And obviously, we're going to get into the game. But even just as an outset, I don't like seeing that narrow diamond. I think it stifles us in so many ways, especially if you consider us to be cutback FC. And I know our goals yesterday both came from the fullbacks, but it makes it very hard because there's no overlap in runs in general unless Pepe does drift out wide. And then it leaves us one up front, and it's a weird formation. It's like a four narrow diamond right winger striker. It's just weird and completely unbalanced, and it seems like he's just picked sort of his 11 best players or the 11 players he wants to play and then put them on the pitch, and there doesn't seem to be any structure. It doesn't suit them. It's just like, when you're 10 years old and you're playing FIFA and you're like, you want all your best players to play, they just stick them anywhere. That's what it kind of feels like to me that he's doing.
What do you make of that, Darren? Would you agree with Tony, or do you think when you saw the team and you saw the players there, you thought, all right, I see what the manager has done here, as Tony said, gone with his best team against a team that really, as you can say, is, undergoing the bounce effect of a new manager?
Well, I mean, first, can I just say, I hope you can hear me okay. I wasn't expecting to be on the podcast today, and I'm standing in a pub car park. And there's a cuckoo above my head. So I hope you can hear it okay. I mean, I'm with Tony. I saw that lineup, and it just seemed that he was trying to cram in his favorite players. And look, I'm going to spend this podcast, I'm sure, trying to defend Emery. I'm a very positive fan, and my thoughts, we're giving this year, he's new in the job. But it was a bad day at the office yesterday, and seeing that team, that lineup. Playing Ozil for the first game away at Watford. Are there any games that Ozil's good for these days? I thought he actually had a decent game yesterday, compared with the rest of them. But we're sort of worried about when we can play him, and playing against a team like Watford away from home didn't seem to me to be a smart way to give him his first minutes of the season. It just seemed to. I don't think he knows his best formation. And he seems to have made some strange decisions yesterday.
We'll definitely get on to the decisions, because I think pretty much everything, apart from the lineup that we just spoke about, can be dissected. The way we set up, the way we sort of just reacted to everything instead of being proactive and taking our game to them. But let's start with the build-up to the first goal. We'll talk about the goal, Tony, but initially, what did you make of the way we started playing? Were you happy with the way we started, or do you think there was certainly things that caught your eye in the build up to the first one?
I mean, sorry, just before I go into that, what were your thoughts on the initial lineup?
Again, look, for me, I wasn't too worried about it. I thought that Kike Sanchez Flores will have this bounce effect, but I could see what Emery was doing. I thought it was going to be a 4-3-1-2, and I didn't quite expect Ceballos to, become a four. I mean, the formation became a 4-2-2-2 in attack and a 4-3-1-2 in defense almost, or a 4-3-3 in defense. And this sort of fluid formation just hasn't worked when you change the personnel a lot. So that was what I was worried about, how we're going to set up defensively. Attacking wise, I wasn't too afraid. But of course, you know, the second half was a completely different tale, and that's something we'll get into. But the first half itself, I thought we were a bit weak attacking wise. I mean, those two goals aside, we didn't really create a whole lot to bother Watford, did we?
For me, I think it's been a problem all season so far that we've known for sort of creating chances and maybe missing a few too many, but we've not really created anything. Like Newcastle, we won 1-0. I think there was maybe one other chance. Burnley, we didn't miss a whole host of chances. We maybe missed one or two. Liverpool is probably ironically the game where we've actually missed the most chances. We're just not really creating anything, and I don't know if Emery's changing things because we're not creating anything, or we're not creating anything because Emery keeps changing it. But it's very difficult because we're bad at both ends of the pitch, essentially. We're extremely lucky in that we've got strikers. I mean, look, we've had three players score this season, Aubameyang, Lacazette and Torreira. We're extremely lucky that we've got strikers that can put the ball in the net. Again, look, everyone knows I don't overly go on stats, and I think XG is the most nonsense stat ever, but I did look at it last night, and both Lacazette and Aubameyang are double what their expected goal should be. Okay, in Lacazette's case, that's not too difficult because he's only got two. But still, if you're you can't rely on that. Look, I don't subscribe to the theory that you maybe do, Schwinn, that it will regress to the mean, but they're not going to continue with double. It's not like you're going to see Aubameyang get 46 goals when he should only score 23. At some point, it is going to taper down, and that has to be a worry that we're not doing anything. Like we are a team at the moment that is scoring goals and winning games and getting points because we have good players, and not because of any system or any style. And I think that's worrying, because as soon as someone has an off day, you're in big, big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, look, you don't really have to regress to the mean to, you know, have a big dent in your output at this point, especially if, you know, Aubameyang and Lacazette are operating at double their XG. And I agree with you. I think those two goals that Aubameyang scored, we'll get onto them now. Darren, walk me through the first one.
Well, Kolasinac, as he did for periods last year, it shows what he's good at. You know, made a good burst. You know, it was that sort of driving run that we saw from him last year. I've got to say, the defending was awful. I mean, Aubameyang is just brilliant. He has time to take the ball, turn a 360-degree pirouette and fire it in the corner. But watching that goal again this morning, he had 2-3 yards to do it and time to do it. I could have scored that. I was good. But it was the way we score goals. I mean, I know that I keep hearing that we don't seem to have any style, and we don't know what Emery's trying to do. You know, we've changed pretty much all of our personnel over the last 2 years. There's an incredible list of players that have left the club and joined the club. And it is still, for me, it's a bedding in period. But that seems to be his style. He wants to play out from the back. He wants to break that first press and attack with pace. And, you know, we're as Tony said, I think, last week, that, you know, the people who are out get better week by week when they're injured. But I think when you do have a balance of a good left back, good right back, I think that's how he wants to play. I think that's why we invested in a new left back. And I think why there's a lot of hope on Bellerin. And Bellerin got a lot better under Emery last year. Bellerin had faded under the last 2 years of Wenger. And under Emery, I think he was one of the things that Emery's done well. There's certain players in that team that have improved. And Bellerin was one of them before the injury. And so I think that's how we want to play. And you could see it yesterday. That's how we're going to attack. You know, we can be narrow in the middle. We can play that diamond, or we can play three with one in front and have the fullbacks attacking. There was a lot more problems yesterday than the goals. You know, we took those well. And, you know, I hate XG. You know, I think it's a bit of a nonsense. I can see the benefit of games when you're not present, that you haven't seen. But when you watch that game, Aubameyang might be double his expected XG. That's because he's fucking good. You know, he's fucking good. So he will outperform his XG. That's why he's a £100 million player.
Tony, you want to say something and comment on that?
Look, I mean, doubling your XG. Again, no, it's not something I believe in, but doubling your XG is completely unsustainable. I expect him to exceed his XG because, as you said, he's very good. He's a £100 million player. But doubling it is just silly and will not be... It is impossible to maintain.
We're in a small, you know, we're five games in or whatever, you know, it's okay, it will even out, it will balance out, but he will have a better XG. Watford, how many shots did Watford have yesterday?
You know, 31.
Their XG, we've got a style out there now where we're not worried about teams having shots from distance. I think I counted 18 of the shots were from outside the box. You know, their strikers' XGs will be below expectation if you're not good, and that is the difference. You know, I don't think we should just say we're lucky to have Aubameyang and Lacazette and Pepe. We've earned the right to buy those players, and we've got some of the best strikers in the league. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, I partially don't disagree with your point. My point is that I know it is a small sample, but the double isn't sustainable. And if he was at 1.5 instead of double, which is still probably better than anyone ever, I'd imagine, we would have scored a couple of goals less, which would be at least 3 points left, because we've only won games by one goal, and then obviously we've drawn two. So we are at the moment relying on someone to perform out of their skin. And that's okay if we have 15 points out of 15. But when you're relying on someone to be so far ahead of their level... Just to, where are we? Seventh, eighth? I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the table, but we're nicking draws at Watford. We're nicking 2-1 wins at home to Burnley. We had one chance in a game away at Newcastle. That's not the form you want when someone's playing out of their skin. That's the form you want when everyone's shit.
He missed a sitter yesterday. Didn't you think there was a chance at 2-0 where a ball just was crossed, I think, from Maitland-Niles, and he ran in and just seemed to completely mistime his run, and it looked easier to score, and he missed the ball completely.
If it's the one I'm thinking of, it was a deflected cross from Ozil. I thought he should have done better. No one really made anything of it. I think that was still at 1-0 at the time. I thought he should have done better as well. I don't know if the bounce just fucked him because the cross deflected, but I thought he should have done better. Yeah.
Yeah, he seemed to pull out from that one. I think he saw the goalkeeper sort of trying to charge and get something on the ball, and I think he just pulled off, hoping that maybe there's someone on the far post. But let's move on to the second goal, because Mesut Ozil was, of course, involved. And perhaps the only positive involvement from Ainsley Maitland-Niles on the day. Why don't you walk us through the goal, Tony, and I'll come back to you, Darren, then for Ainsley.
Yeah, I mean... What's key about this is Aubameyang's movement. There will be a lot of people that don't rate him and call him a tapping merchant, which is their prerogative. I'm not going to try and correct anyone's opinion or force my opinion on them. But early on in that move, Aubameyang, not even early on, I think three passes before he taps the ball in the net, he has the ball on pretty much the halfway line. And there's probably eight defenders between him and the goal. And he lays it off with a nothing ball and off he goes. And then three or four passes later, he ends up tapping in the six-yard box with no one around him. Some people will go, oh, it's another tap-in. That doesn't happen by accident. I think it'd be criminal to not mention Ozil's pass. I don't know how much they showed of it on TV, but I think of the players celebrating, one went to Aubameyang straight away, and the others all ran to Ozil first. That might be a ball we expect Ozil to make, but that's still not a normal ball. There's probably, you don't expect any other of the players on the pitch, maybe Ceballos, to make that pass. That's Carvin Park. Good run by Ainsley as well, because he kind of went, realised he was going to go offside, stopped, and then went again. People go on about, I think it was 20 or 25 passes. I don't kind of look into stuff like that, because you can have moves that are 50 passes, but only one incisive one, and then someone scores. And I think that was one of their moves where it was, we kept the ball nicely, I'm not going to argue about that, but then that one bit of genius or creativity or that one bit of something different that you need came from Ozil, and it completely unlocked them. And Ainsley was an easy square ball, which he played, and obviously a very simple finish for Aubameyang.
Go on, Darren. Have your say about Ainsley and what you made of that second goal.
But I just think this is, it goes back where Akanji's trying to do. It's all about movement, isn't it? It's about movement. And I think that's what was so disappointing in the second half of the game, is that when we play like that, we sort of take it for granted, being Arsenal fans. We've seen it a lot, where we've got some really dynamic runners. And when you've got a maestro like Ozil playing that ball through, it's perfect. We score a lot of our goals like that. You know, it's a threaded ball from Ozil, perfect timing, great pace on the ball, good run by one of the fullbacks, crossover. And again, Aubameyang, as Tony says, went from the halfway line. It's the way he holds his run as well, and then just makes that move at the last minute. He's exceptional. You know, I don't think he's the best finisher in the world. We talked about the one he missed, you're right, from a deflected Ozil cross. I don't think he's the most natural finisher, but his sense of being in the right place at the right time is going to give us a great season. And I think he will score 40 goals.
Well, let's hope that is the case, that he will get that 40-goal tally. But right now, we're even struggling to create 40 chances. So let's hope he triples his XG. And I can promise every listener out there that this is the end of the XG debate for the day. Now, before we go into the second half, there was a little bit of a squabble at the end of the first, where Pepe sort of kicked out, maybe, is the
he
only...
He just stuck his toe in his bottom, didn't he?
Or shaved.
I mean, he didn't kick him. He just lifted his foot and touched his toe into his bottom. I mean, it was a strange thing. And then gets annoyed when the guy reacts. I was just so happy to see. You know, I love Guendouzi. I love his attitude. Give me, as I've said many times, give me 10 Guendouzis and I'll pay to watch us every week. I like that one of the youngest players on the pitch is running in to defend his teammate. We've been missing that for a long time. What was strange for me in that situation is, and obviously I've only seen it on television and they showed it 3 or 4 times, Xhaka wasn't in the picture. You know, Jack is our captain. He should be the one who's going to pull our players away, going to put some discipline in. And he wasn't there anywhere. Even Ozil was sort of joining in. And with those buggy eyes, he looks menacing. You know, but I was pleased to see it. Tony?
The incident, I didn't really see. It was down the other end of the ground. I've seen it back. I don't really think there was much in it. I think the point you make about Guendouzi comes just completely into favouritism, to be honest, because had Xhaka ran in and got booked for an incident that was nothing to do with him, people wouldn't go, oh, he's the captain leading by example, or look at him having other players back. It'd be, fucking hell, another stupid booking for Xhaka. I don't mind what Guendouzi done. I have absolutely no issue with it at all. But I remember, I don't know if Shrim will remember this because he was on the podcast, in Jack's last year, in one of his last games, he played Southampton at home. We was out on our feet, 3-2 up in stoppage time. He smashed someone, took the book in, they reacted, headbutted him, got sent off, so now we're playing against 10 men. People criticising Jack for getting involved in an incident he didn't need to get into. This was at a time when Jack was kind of out of favour. I came on here and said, perfect, he helped the team because he got them down to 10 men when we was in trouble. Again, what Guendouzi done, I have no problem with, but I want the same reaction when any player does it. And for some reason, our fan base don't seem to give that at the moment. That's not a criticism of Guendouzi, it's more a criticism of our fan base, because I can promise you, and to be honest, the fans at the game yesterday were very loud, but I was actually embarrassed at times. Literally, every time Ozil got the ball, he might as well have started booing. Xhaka, I mean, literally, he could do nothing. Everything he'd done was pretty much booed. Like, shoot, he shoots. Oh, what a cunt, drop him. I don't know how he's even a professional footballer. And that's just what we've got to deal with at the moment. And to be honest, it's getting harder and harder to stand next to some of these people in the stands. I mean, yesterday I was a bit unfortunate that none of my friends could get tickets, so I didn't even have them to speak to, who I know are semi-rational. I literally felt like I was surrounded by morons yesterday.
Wow, doesn't make for pleasant conversation, but we'll move on because we have some more unpleasant conversation to make. Second half. Now, I don't even know where to begin with this one, because that might be the most immature, spineless, toothless, and as Granit said, scared performance I have ever seen by, let alone Arsenal, any football team. You know, teams have a plan. They have a way to come in and exercise what they've been practicing on the pitch, on the training ground, and then have another plan to try and bypass, you know, the first plan if that failed. But yesterday, it just seemed like everyone went into a shell, particularly at the beginning of the second half, not even when Socrates did what he did, and we'll get on to that. But from the offset, it seemed like we're going to continue playing out from the back despite a couple of errors in the first half, particularly from Guendouzi, that could have been punished. And we continued sticking with that. Never once thought to move the players up 20, 30 yards and hoof it, because every time we did that, which was just a couple of times, all we found was Aubameyang, who is not the greatest at winning headers, completely isolated. And at that point, you're asking Mesut Ozil, Danny Ceballos, while he was still on, to cover about 40 yards between them, because they don't know exactly what's going to happen. And I think at this point, I also would like to criticize Granit. You know, as the captain, he's the one who should be making those orders clear to everyone that, okay, this hasn't worked, let's move up and provide some more support for a long...
Can I just step in and say he was, and I've seen people criticize him for doing it, because they're saying Emery clearly has a philosophy of playing out and Granit's going against him. So this is another case where he can't win. Again, look, I feel like I come on here just to defend Granit, and I'm not particularly, but in this situation, you're saying one thing. I've literally seen the exact opposite argument on Twitter today. I don't know what people want him to do.
Well, I stand corrected then, because from my view, that was invisible. So I stand corrected. But then I suppose the lens should be on Emery, that when you're clearly seeing your plan A isn't working and we are under pressure, you know, under the cloche at 2-0 up, why would you not try something else? Darren, I'm going to let you come in first, and Tony, why don't you take it from there?
Joshua, and you broke up just a little at the end there. What did you just say at the end there? I lost you. Your signal dropped out.
Talk me through the beginning of the second half and the build-up to their first goal.
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of talk that we were terrible in the second half. I didn't think we were very good at all, 90 minutes. You know, we were 2-0 up, and it was a bit like Tottenham last week where we went 2-0 down. We were the better side, and yet they broke twice, a couple of mistakes, and we found ourselves two goals behind. You know, this was, I thought, an abysmal performance from start to finish, everyone. And I'm not sure that there was a plan B. I want to defend Emery. I think there's some mitigating factors and things. But it was just clearly obvious that, I mean, that comment by Xhaka that we were scared sort of resonated with me, is that we want players to stand up. The only way we're going to reduce that pressure on us is to control the football. And it's something we're very good at Arsenal Football Club. We've got some really technically skillful players. And yet it was like the Liverpool away game. The ball just kept coming back and back and back. How many shots did they have, Schwinn? 30-odd?
31. You know,
the most ever since Opta created their stats. And I just found that, you know, we sat deeper and deeper. Now, Emery didn't do anything, but there's some really experienced players in there. Socrates, Luiz, Xhaka, you know, Ozil. These are people that have won World Cups, that have played at the real highest level of football. And yet there wasn't anything on that there was no one who instigated any change. As a, you know, as a fan watching it on television yesterday, we're sitting deeper and deeper against a team that's got nothing but energy. And, you know, it was a shocking day yesterday. It was a shock. And football affects me. I mean, I'm an Arsenal fan many, many years. It's one of those games that I went to bed depressed last night. I woke up depressed. The only good thing about football is that 3 days later, 4 days later, you get a chance to put things right. But I'm finding it very, very difficult to find anything positive about what we did yesterday. Didn't feel that there was any structure, any, you know, leaders on the pitch is something we've said at Arsenal a lot. But there's a lot of experienced players out there, and yet there doesn't seem to be any unity, and there doesn't seem to be a plan B of any description.
Tony, tell me, as you were watching that game, I mean, just to, again, go over some stats, Arsenal have faced 96 shots this season, more than any other side in the Premier League, Serie A, La Liga, Ligue 1, and the Bundesliga. 2% of all shots in the Premier League this season came from Watford in that second half. As Darren said, 31 shots we faced, which is the most that has ever been recorded since Opta has started keeping record of these. I mean, at some point, you have to consider and acknowledge that for all the talk of Emery being this tactical genius, and look, I'm not taking anything away in terms of his film study. He probably does put in hours of film study. But when you're in the technical area and you can see these things happening, I mean, what's going on? Do we Is he a fraud? I mean, let's just get to the brass tacks. Is that what's going on here? Is he nicking a living?
I'm going to come back to that. Firstly, look, the 31 shots thing doesn't bother me. And me and you had this conversation last night that most of them, especially in the first half, were from miles out and going into the upper tier. I don't mind them shots being taken. So I think that has been over-egged. Not, I mean, look, it's true, but I mean, I think people have overestimated its importance, in my opinion. On Emery, look, I've never really been a fan. Everyone listens knows that, and you kind of have to be a bit pragmatic on here, so you can't go all out, but I'm not an Emery fan. I don't really understand what he does. I think people have been making excuses for him that aren't there for a long, long time. And I don't see what he gives us that someone else come in. Like, people are, it's a project, but I would expect someone to be at the point where he is now on day one, doesn't know his best team, doesn't know his best formation, doesn't know his best style. We have no identity. We can't defend. Our defence has got worse. Our attacks got worse. Our midfield are completely disjointed because he changes the players and the roles every week. I could get that excuse of he's new for the first 2 months. Now, I can't offer an excuse. And then the excuse came, they're not his players. Well, now they are. I mean, you look at yesterday, both centre-backs, the keeper. The right-back isn't his, but he bombed off another right-back in Lichtsteiner in favour of this right-back, so you can't hold that on him. Xhaka isn't his, but he had Torreira on the bench, so then that's his decision. Guendouzi is his. Pepe is his. I counted during the game. I think there was six of the starting 11 were his, and then there was Xhaka who could have not been. He had an option. I don't get where the excuses are coming from now. I was going to tweet this last night, but I thought maybe it was a bit reactionary from me. I don't know the reasons why people still want him there. And I was never a big Wenger out. I'm not one of these that will go and hold banners and go and boo him at games because I want the best for Arsenal Football Club. But in my opinion, the best would be for him to no longer be there.
Can I just come back on that? Because, you know, I mean, I say I want to defend Emery. I've got, you know, I saw that he came in for a two-year contract with an option to extend for three. Now, he's halfway through that two-year contract, just over half. For me, the jury's still out. I want to see what he does now with his team. We're five games into a new season. And, of course, I'm hugely disappointed about yesterday's performance. And yesterday, for me, was a terrible day at the office. But there are some mitigating factors. He's got a team of internationals who the majority were away on international duty. So he's got less time to work with them. But for me, you can keep blaming the manager. But I'm sure we'll get onto the goals. But once again, two of our £5 million a year players made schoolboy errors. And that happened at Liverpool. It's happened all season long. It happened against Tottenham. You take those mistakes out. Now, obviously, that's, you know, in an ideal world, people are going to make mistakes, but you take those mistakes out of our results so far this year, and it would have been a much better start to the season. You know, they are.
For me, if you ask Socrates to play out from the back, you're going to get mistakes. The guy, look, I like Socrates. I think he's a good defender. Can't play football. So
no, but
and then
he's,
you say the Xhaka mistakes. Let's go back to Tottenham. Don't play him defensive midfielder. We know that. Play Torreira there. He doesn't want to. So you can go on about individual mistakes, but you've got to think of the reasons why them players are there. And again, it falls on.
But he hasn't got an alternative at the back.
He'll never be a good footballer. So you have to either, if you're going to play out from the back, always play the other way, which we actually did in the first half. I think we very rarely went Socrates' way in the first half.
But Socrates had two options yesterday, and he chose the wrong one. Yeah, it was, you know, it was something you're playing directly in front of your goal. I mean, he should have put it the other side of Guendouzi. I think was receiving the ball to turn the other way. It was a schoolboy error. This guy's earning £5 million a year. You can't blame Emery for the mistake of Socrates. There is
I
no
can blame
one...
him for asking Socrates to play football when everyone knows the guy can't play football. I fully can blame him, and I have to blame him for that. It's like saying signing Messi and then playing long ball. Oh, it's not Emery's fault that Messi isn't winning headers against Craig Dawson. Yes, it is. Don't give the ball to his head.
I think I'll have to side with Tony on this one, because while I agree with you, Darren, that Socrates made the wrong choice, and that's totally on him, and by all accounts, he's also come out on social media and taken responsibility for it. But as I said earlier, there were clearly cracks in playing out from the back. Not in the second half, starting in the first half. I mean, Guendouzi got caught, and we almost got punished for that. So when you can clearly see that playing out from the back in this case is leading to trouble, you have to have another option out there, and which just wasn't the case yesterday. It wasn't even a plan. You know, we didn't try.
The players were static, Shrin. The players were static. When, you know, this is what it looks about. You watch Manchester City play out the back and the movement is incredible. I'm sure that, you know, that if they've been working on playing out from the back, but they were static. There wasn't any movement. He had two options. He chose the bad one. Look, we're struggling for centre-backs. You know, we've got one coming in next year. We've got Chambers, who's somebody we're happy to send out on loan last year at Fulham. And we've got Holding coming back, and he's become the best centre-back in the world since he's been injured. But we haven't got any options. That's what he's got. Luiz and Socrates are the only options he's got. Now, OK, you can say don't play at the back. And, of course, that was wrong. They should have mixed it up a bit. You know, and I say, bad day at the office for Emery yesterday. No change. We kept trying to do the same things. But if Socrates doesn't give the ball away inside his own 10-yard, you know, inside 10 yards from the goal, we don't let in that goal. You know, he's a professional footballer. If the pass isn't on, boot it upfield. You know, or play out to Maitland-Niles, who was his other option. It was a bad mistake, and that mistake let them back into the game. And suddenly we've dropped 2 points.
Well, the counter argument is that last year the same arguments were made when we failed to play out from the back. It's Cech in goal. It's Mustafi. It's Koscielny. These boys cannot do it. Now we have a completely different trio closest to goal, and it's the same mistakes. At some point, we have to look past the personnel. At some point, we have to look past the first half that we played, where we really struggled, despite Granit dropping deeper sometimes to add numbers, despite Guendouzi dropping deeper to add numbers. There has to be some order from the technical area. Look, I agree, the players have to be held responsible. But after one half of failing tactics that we didn't get punished for, that we got away with, you have to hold some accountability. Now, let's take a step back and talk about some of the headlines that were made in the build-up to the game, right? Alan Smith did a piece that said that he has heard whispers that the players don't quite understand what Emery is telling them, the instructions. Now, we can sort of give, you know, some of that impetus to the language. But it's been a year, and he has improved in his language, and he has a team around him that can help translate and get the best out of his players. As we know, the language of football and film should help curb these errors. But arguably, we're worse defensively. Our attack, despite a 70 million infusion, and yes, he needs time, but despite that, we are really struggling. Who do you hold responsible after a year of changes in the squad, but still not enough change translating onto the field? Let's start with you, Tony. And in the meantime, Darren, why don't you think about that?
I only heard half the question because the postman came. so I got, who do you blame for things being worse, essentially? And I think I pretty much actively answered that in my last comment. So I don't know what else I've missed in part of your question, but from what I heard, I can't blame anyone but Emery.
All right, Darren, why don't you talk us through the comments and what Alan Smith said and what you make of all of that?
Oh, there's so much to say. You know, we're getting on Emery's back five games into the season. City lost at Norwich, you know, Tottenham lost at home to Newcastle. Chelsea, you know, have dropped points at Sheffield United. You know, football's not easy. It hasn't been the greatest start to the season. It hasn't been the worst by a long stretch. I just think that sometimes we're so reactionary in this game. I still put it down to you've got £5 million a year. These are at the top of their game. They're 30-year-old experienced defenders who are making mistakes. There's no other option there for him. If you don't make those mistakes, you don't lose the game. It's you know, for me, it was an abysmal performance yesterday. You know, I'm sure we'll get on to doing our 3-2-1s at some stage. It's almost incredible. It's almost impossible to try and find players to give points to.
Sure, but still, talk me through Alan Smith's comments.
Which were?
That the players don't really know what Emery wants from them.
I think, you know, I feel so negative today. It was a terrible day at the office yesterday. 2-0 up, you know, shouldn't have been 2-0 up, and then we can't close out a game. He's hearing whispers that they don't understand. I think that personnel, you know, I mean, we're relying so much. We haven't really seen his team at his best yet. He wants a right back that knows how to defend, not a standing player. He's got a left back that can't defend, who's, you know, good going forward, but isn't a great footballer, very square on, very side on. He's got two footballing centre-halves, one who's good and one who can't play football. You know, I don't think this is his team, and I don't think we've seen the best. I think there's responsibility that's got to be taken for everyone. It's very easy to say, oh, we don't know what. Let's blame the manager. We don't know what he wants. Well, you go on. Carry on. Go on.
Well, no, I was just going to say, look, I think most people are now under the assumption that his contract is not going to be extended. So he's not going to get another transfer window because January traditionally is a one player in at most window. So we can't keep saying these players aren't his. Look, I don't agree with you, but I can see where you're coming from. But the fact is, he is going to have to deal with them players because it's unlikely these will be the last set of players. It's likely these are the last set of players he's ever going to have at this club. So we can say, oh, this defender can't do that, this defender can't do that, he needs this, he needs that. But at some point, you have to play with the hand you're given. It's not a game of poker where he can just go fold, 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 fold until he gets pocket aces. He has to work with what he's got.
But those mistakes that were made, we haven't got onto the penalty, you know, they are schooled by errors from experienced, well-paid professional footballers. I don't see how it can, you know, the manager may have them playing out from the back, but they're not stupid players. They should understand. I don't get the fact that they, you know, I disagree with what Alan Smith's comments are. You know, they may be struggling to come to terms with it. They're still working on it, but I can see what he's trying to do. I mean, it was terrible yesterday. I'm really struggling to find positives. I'm finding it difficult to find positives about Emery. I thought it was, along with the Crystal Palace game towards the end of last season, this was probably his second worst game. But I'm going to forgive that because he hasn't got his side yet. Talk to me again at Christmas and see what the mood is.
Just to go in on the points made. Sorry, obviously I missed when you asked the question. When understands, a lot of people are taking it as it's a language barrier, but I mean, he can speak a few languages. There's so many languages in the dressing room. I don't think that's the issue. I think what the guy was trying to get at was they don't get it. They don't understand what he's trying to do more than they don't understand as in language wise. And I think that's echoed by pretty much everyone. We don't, how do we play? What's our style? I mean, if that is the case of the players, I wouldn't be at all surprised. With other managers, even when things aren't working, you can understand what they're trying to do. And with Emery, you can't. And I can imagine the players kind of feel exactly the same. It wouldn't at all surprise me if that is completely true.
All right. Well, let's take this from another angle. When that team was announced yesterday, an hour before kickoff, reading Twitter and the WhatsApp groups that I'm in, people were quite excited by that lineup. You know, I think, Shrin, you said at the top of the show that, you know, you were quite pleased with it. Yep. Putting two creative players in, Ceballos and Ozil. It was an aggressive attacking formation. I didn't hear any criticism of Emery then. It was like, yeah, what a good... I mean, me and Tony both said we were a little bit... I thought it was unbalanced. But there was the majority of people were quite excited by that team he put out. And then it doesn't work. And then the managers, you know, put out two creative players. He should have, you know, been.
But that's
more
an occupational hazard, isn't it? I mean, that's just because, I mean, the manager doesn't earn his money for putting the best lineup out there. You know, it's about putting an effective lineup out there. That's what it boils down to.
I just think there's got to be some responsibility from those players. You know, it is on the back of an international week, and I know for a change, not all of our players were away. But I do think it, the way that Emery does train his players, he does all of this video work, he does spend hours, you know, putting together plans for these oppositions. I don't think he had that much time to work on it. And we were surprised. You know, we as we always seem to do, we were playing a team that had a new manager bounce. The fans were up. They worked so hard, Whopper. Let's give some credit there. The Premier League is difficult. say again, City lost at Norwich, you know, getting caught in possession at the back. Gundogan giving away the ball, caught in possession in 8 yards from goal. These are the mistakes that are made. The football is difficult, you know. Tottenham lost at home to Newcastle. I just think that, you know, we're 5 games in. It hasn't been a terrible start. We're 7th in the table. It's going to be a very interesting league. And we do have some key players that are going to improve our side, that are going to come back into it.
All right. Look, it's been 45 minutes and we haven't even gotten to the goals that they've scored. But I did glance over the questions that we've gotten, and there's enough in there for us to address that. So if you guys don't mind, let's move on to questions.
Sure.
3-2-1. Okay, let's do 3-2-1. Why don't you start off with your three, Darren?
Aubameyang.
Aubameyang. I'm guessing that would be the same for me and Tony as well.
Yeah, he's you know, he scored 2 goals through his own quality. You know, with God, we need him.
Tony.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need to go too much into that. If anyone hasn't given it, it's going to be amazing.
All right, all right. So that's a universal three from all of us, from Aubameyang. Tony, your two.
The 2 and 1 are very difficult. I was speaking to Craig last night, who's done the ratings, and I said to him, I don't envy him, because no matter what he put, people will argue with it. And I'm not, I hammer Craig quite a bit on here, and I'm not going to today because I don't agree with what he said, but then everyone is going to have different views. Give my two, probably Ceballos. I felt he was the only one that was sort of actively breaking the press and going forward and keeping the ball. I don't think he was outstanding. To be honest, I don't think Aubameyang was outstanding, but Aubameyang was our best. And for me, Ceballos was offering that something different we needed. And to be honest, I thought it was criminal to take him off. And I know we're going to speak about it in the questions, but yeah, I think him as my two.
Before we go on to you, Darren, I'll just quickly read off Craig's ratings. You can find these at clockandtalk.blogspot.com. He went with a 5 for Leno, Niles at 4, Socrates 3, David Luiz 3, Kolasinac at 4.5, Granitxhaka the same, Guendouzi at a 5, Ceballos 5.5, Mesut Ozil 5, Nicolas Pepe 5, and Aubameyang 6.5. So that's the ratings Craig has done, and you can again find them at clockandtalk.blogspot.com. Darren, your two.
I think if I can't give it to Aubameyang again, then I'm going to go with Leno. He didn't do anything amazing, but he held the ball well from a lot of shots that he was peppered by. I thought he made an excellent stop in the first half, the one that he tipped over the bar. That was really smashed, and he was strong enough to push it over the bar. I mean, there was two, as Tony says, 2s and 1s are very difficult. Leno, because he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, look, I'll have
that's,
to...
That's where my two.
Yeah, it's the same thing for me. Like, 2 and 1 are just consolations at this point. I'll have to go with Ceballos as well. I think he was a bit more impactful in the game, and taking him off was criminal for me. And, of course, we'll get into that as we approach the questions. I'll get my one out of the way as well. Just going off what Darren said, I think Leno kept us in the game. If he hadn't made that save at the very end, we could have dropped all points in the day. So for me, he gets the one. What about you, Tony?
Ozil, just again, because he kept the ball. You notice the difference when him and Ceballos went off. And I know people don't rate him and people are going to call him lazy, but there's no substitute for having the ball. And that's what them two especially give you. And he did create probably the only bit of quality in the whole game. Came from Ozil's boot. Again, not a fantastic game, and I wouldn't be surprised if some people rated him as one of the worst players on the pitch. But for me, and what I appreciate and what I think we needed yesterday, I think Ozil gave us. And yeah, so he would be my one.
All right, Darren.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ozil as well. Sorry to be boring on that, but... I'm not Ozil's greatest fan. I think it's sad that we've got a player. Well, I love watching. He's the sort of player I get out of bed to watch. He's the sort of player I want to pay money to see. One of my criticisms of Emery, and seeing I'm trying hard to defend him, is the fact that he hasn't got the best out of one of the greatest players in football today. But And I thought it was a strange game to start him. I thought he needed some minutes in his legs. But he just has got that class, and I love watching him. As much as I'm quite often critical of him, I think in his, 4 years at Arsenal, he just hasn't turned into the player that we hoped he was going to be. But I thought he was just a little bit of class yesterday. And it's difficult to find a one, but I think he was probably our one.
All right, so those are our 3-2-1s. Now let's move on to questions, because we have gone over almost, 45, 46 minutes at this point. All right, so the first question is from Sushant, and he's got four questions. So I'll start with you, Darren.
Hey.
Yes, one of the regulars from from the Arsenal India podcast.
From the Arsenal India podcast, yeah.
The good old days when we were still winning games and not putting out shit performances, apparently. So the first question.
We're laughing, yeah. We haven't qualified for the Champions League since I started the podcast.
And then we go on and bring you on to our podcast. Wow, yeah, brilliant. Yeah. So the first question, this changing formation each game kind of confuses our midfield. Should we as a team not focus on developing and perfecting a plan A?
Are you asking that to anyone in particular?
You, Darren, go on.
I think I'm crying out for that midfield to work. We've got so many options, and I don't think he knows his best. He seems like Xhaka is going to be first name on his team sheet for a while. But I just think there's something happening at Chelsea now, which is something that we have got the opportunity to do. I think it's I just would like him to start with Torreira, Willock, and Guendouzi, and stick with it for a month. Let those players with energy and creativity, and play with one of those, either Ceballos or Ozil, sitting in front of those three. I think the chopping and changing isn't helping. How must Willock feel? Played great for three games, then gets dropped. You know, he comes on 20 minutes to go in a game where we're under the cosh. It's not the sort of game, but start him. You know, so let's. I think it is confusing. I think he is chopping and changing a bit too much. I don't think he knows his best three. I don't think he knows his best formation. And this is the podcast where I'm trying to support Emery.
We can see how that's going. But you brought a Willock there. And I think it's as good as a time as any to move on to the subs, because Sushant also asks about why was Ceballos subbed so early? So, Tony, can you talk us through what you felt about that and the remaining subs that went on during the day?
Literally every single sub was moronic.
And say that again.
Obviously, I thought Ozil was helping to control the game, but when I saw Willock getting stripped, I thought Ozil off. He's not played too much this season, and then he goes and Willock goes into 10, or Willock goes into the midfield to use his engine, and Ceballos goes into 10. No problem. And then Ceballos' name goes up, and I'm like, what? And there was boos from the crowd. Then. Next up was Torreira, right?
Yep, Guendouzi.
So we see Torreira get stripped, and you think, okay, now it's Ozil. And Willock goes into 10, Torreira slots into the middle. No, Guendouzi. Okay, he was on the booking, but still. And then Nelson, we're 2-2, 10 minutes left or something? And then we go to a 4-2-3-1? What is he doing? Honestly, what was he doing? The change of formation at the time, and especially, Reece is not the strongest. He's not physical at all. And as Darren said, Watford are a team of energy, and they'll run all day, and they'll battle for every ball. That's not the game you want Reece in. Literally every single decision, I was sort of left scratching my head.
I can't defend him. but let's. You were right. Ozil needed to. You know, he's probably only got an hour in him. He had to come off. And the comments that it was too hot for Ceballos was a bit of a nonsense. I understand what he was trying to say is that it was a hot day. It was a game where we had to do a lot of running, and to freshen up the midfield was needed. But the mistake I thought he made was to put two creative players on to start, Ceballos and Ozil, and then took two of them off, which left us no out ball whatsoever. I thought it was a nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be honest, I might go and move to Peckham or wherever Joe Willock's from, because apparently it's hotter than Madrid. that's my next holiday. I'm not going to Madrid next year. I'm going to Peckham. yeah, it literally just left us nothing. And to be honest, I kind of did feel a little bit sorry for Emery with the Willock sub, because again, it was a game that was a bit chaotic in the middle, and I thought that would probably suit Willock a bit. As I said, I wouldn't have made the change he did, but I thought that that bit of chaos in the middle could suit his style, his quick, strong, running, rangy style. But I thought Willock probably had his worst game for us in the last, since January. I know he's only featured fairly apart from at the start of this season, but I think he's impressed even in little cameos he had in the FA Cup last season and in the Europa League final for 20 minutes. I thought yesterday he was very poor, and I kind of feel a bit sorry for Emery on that, because that's the kind of game where you'd think it would probably suit Willock. So that is the only bit of sympathy I'm going to give Emery.
All right, moving on to the next question, again from Sushant, and I'm going to combine these two questions for you, Darren. So he asks, even against a non-top six team, why did we elect to play a diamond, and why did we elect to play so much reactive football?
Well, I think his style is to play counter-attacking, and I think that's, God, I'm going to criticise him again. I think that's the bit that just doesn't sit with us as Arsenal fans, because we're Arsenal. And we should be going to these teams, and you know, we've got enough in our squad to go and attack these sides and play some beautiful football. Whereas he seems to want to play out from the back and counter attack, and it's not really working at the moment, is it? Well, sorry, what was the question? You guys, I'm standing in the rain now. It's freezing cold. It's pissing down with rain. It's hard to concentrate. What was his question?
Why did we elect to play a diamond?
Yeah, I still don't see it as a diamond. I see it, and I think, looking at our personnel, it's the formation I want us to go with. I think when we played three up front last week, we all wanted to see it. We're all fans. We wanted to see Pepe, Lacazette and Aubameyang all play together. But we don't really need that. I think we missed a bit of creativity. Now, I think playing with a back four, with three in front of them. So, you know, you can call it a diamond, but it feels more to me like a 4-3-1-2 is our best formation with the players that we got. Get two new fullbacks in. And I think, you know, I'm not sure it is a diamond, especially yesterday. The diamond was crushed back, wasn't it? I mean, we were playing 4-4-5-2. Is that 11? At the end of the game, you know. I don't really see it as a diamond, but I think we all just want to see us be a little bit more attack-minded. You know, I don't think sucking these teams in suits us with our shaky defence. Tony?
I don't know why I played it. The only argument I could potentially put up is he was looking to starve them of possession. That's making an argument for the sake of it, because I don't think it suits us at all. I mean, just as a start, as I said, I started off the show by saying this, Pepe's naturally going to drift out wide. He is a right winger. So it leaves you massively lopsided from the get-go.
So what would you have done then, Tony? What was your perfect formation yesterday, you know?
The difficulty was always going to be that left side, and I think he might have had to shoehorn someone in there, or play a Reece, who's maybe not as good as the guy. He's not as good as Ceballos, but he might have been more suited to the role. Or you shoehorn Ceballos, and because Ceballos has played, he played on the left anyway, just not as high up as I would have liked. So I would have gone 4-2-3-1.
Just quickly, even this international break, based on, you know, some of the good performances he's had for Spain, he played on the left wing.
Yeah, no, that's what I would have gone 4-2-3-1 with Ceballos on the left. You know he's going to drift in and it's going to hamper your width a little bit. But nothing like what happened. And as I said, he played on the left anyway, just 20 yards deeper than I would have liked him.
But if you're playing a 4-2-3-1 with Pepe on the right-hand side of that, then you're expecting Pepe to track back and defend. And that's not something that I've seen in his early days that he's going to do.
Yeah, but we haven't seen him play up front, but Emery's decided to do it twice. And also, with 10 minutes to go, apparently that was the perfect thing to do, get Pepe to track back, because De La Feo was their most dangerous player. Let's not sidestep that. De La Feo was their best player by miles. And with 10 minutes to go, with us completely under the cosh, there was only going to be one winger. We went 4-2-3-1, and Pepe was fully, it was directly in line with where I was sitting, fully sprinting back to try and double up on De La Feo. So if you're saying we can't do that from the start, okay, I half get your argument. When the manager does it with 10 minutes to go, when the game, we're on the ropes fully, if it was in boxing, we're getting a standing count, then suddenly, if you can do that in the last 10 when the game's in trouble, then you can do it for 90.
Yeah, it wasn't his
and
best
maybe
day,
if you
was
do it? It goes the other way. That De La Feo thinks, shit, I have to double up because Pepe beating my fullback for fun here. But the way it was, because Pepe wasn't naturally out wide, didn't really have a position, De La Feo cheated his defending all game. And people hammer Maitland-Niles. I don't know if we've got a question on it, so I'm going to kind of go into it now. He was hung out to dry yesterday because De La Feo was massively cheating his defensive duties. Pepe was instructed to play centrally, so wasn't helping defensively at all because he saw himself as a striker. I don't understand. When you're playing against one of the sharpest wingers, I'm not saying best wingers, one of the sharpest wingers in the league, and you're a makeshift fullback, I don't really know what people expect him to do.
All right, let's move on to the next question because I'm sure there will be more meat on the bones for that one. Tony, this is for you. Predictions on who will last longer, Emery or Ozil?
Ozil.
Quick word on that, Darren.
How long's Ozil got left in his contract?
2 years.
2 years.
And Emery's got one. that's to be honest, that's my main reason for it, because I still don't think anyone's going to buy Ozil in the summer, and I don't think Emery will get extended.
Emery.
Ooh, interesting. Well, we'll see how that one works out. Sticking with you, Darren, on this one. Arsenal have now conceded 96 shots, as mentioned earlier in the podcast, in just 5 Premier League games this season, more than any team in Europe's top 5 leagues. Sandeep says, Darren, surely you cannot be defending Emery still. There is an issue with how he sets his team with his tactics and not the players. Similarly, I should say, Ivan says, Darren, you still positive about this Emery nonce, mate?
Toby said it earlier, and I agree 100% with him. I'm not bothered about that statistic. It's the way we're setting up is to, you know, you must have both played football. There's certain times where you just want to let them shoot from 25 yards. If you've got a really good goalkeeper, let them shoot from anywhere they like. You know, occasionally one's going to fly in, and that's happened to us over the years. It seems to be we're going to deal with crosses and we're going to deal with the box. And if you like, Emery's done that well because we've had the most shots against us.
You're really putting a positive spin on this, aren't you?
No, what I'm saying is that it's not great. It's not a great statistic, but it's not like any of those goals have come from those shots from outside. You know, the goals have come from individual errors. You know, throughout the season, you could go through pretty much every goal we've had this year, and it's been a complete cock-up by an individual. You know, Luis has done, 3? Socrates, you know, you go through each goal and there's been real issues. But the fact that, you know, we're letting people shoot from 20 yards, got no issue with it. How many of those are from outside the box? Come on, Swin, stat man. Out of those 96 shots, how many have been outside the box?
I'm not too sure about that, but I will say the same thing to you that I said to Tony, that it's not just about the number of shots. It's also how we were backing off. We were letting them have shots on. Now, look, yes, sure, you know, from outside the box, they had a couple of cracks from, you know, the corner of the box, trying to curl one in, De La Feo in particular. Decore tried those a couple of times. And yeah, you can call them speculative at the very least. But there were instances when at the very edge of the box, our players were just retreating. You know, they were not willing, and this probably, you know, does fare into the next question. They were scared of putting a foot in, maybe because they didn't want to give a foul away, or they just were not sure who's around them. And that this does bring us on to the next question. I'll go to you, Tony, for this. Why would the captain of Arsenal Football Club say that we were scared in the second half? We knew they would come at us and push us hard, but we have to show more character and not be scared. Look, I'll even add something on top of this. Our manager, about 3 weeks ago, said that I would rather not play a side like Liverpool. I mean, how is that defensible in any way?
On the Xhaka point, he is painfully honest. Whether he should say that or not is, I don't think he should. Look, he's right, is the first point we have to go with. It was evident. You could see the way they're playing. Should he say it? No. I remember Walcott at Palace was captain a few years ago when we lost 3-0, and he came out and said basically the players didn't want it, or Palace players wanted it more. And he got hammered for it. I don't know. Like, as I said, he's right, which makes it very hard to criticise. Should he come out and say it? Probably not. is there any negatives of coming out and saying it? Again, probably not. And again, I think if it was a different player, then people would respect the honesty. I mean, Aubameyang's come out and said a few things this morning, and people have praised him for it. And they've been a lot more critical than what Xhaka was. And I make Aubameyang right. Again, 100% not criticising him. But I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something along the lines of, we're basically just giving goals away. And everyone said, oh, yeah, he's right. Look at him working his bollocks off, scoring all our goals, and then they're just giving them away at the other end. Whereas for me, that's a lot more damning because it's basically personally criticising someone than what Xhaka said. But it's personnel and who said it, which depends on what reaction you're going to get.
Yeah, it is one of those things where, again, look, I'll be honest, I'd rather not play Liverpool as well, but it's not an option. And sometimes plain honesty can be quite painful, as you said. But I wonder if there is a need to say those things and stir up, you know, the fan base, especially when you're using words like scared and fear. On the same team.
Come on, look, let me jump in on the back of Emery here, because I think the quote that he said, you don't want to play Liverpool, if you see the quote, I saw him say it, he said it with a smile on his face, you know, second, third game of the season, away from home, they've just won the European Cup, it's not the time you want to play them. It wasn't a serious comment. When it's written down, it looks bad, but it was said at the end of a long interview with a laugh in his voice. It wasn't, Xhaka should have called out. I can imagine Tez on his podcast. Xhaka should have come out and said, they should have just fucking cunted it upfield more. You know, that's what Xhaka really should have said. You know, that's what Aubameyang's come out and said. We're giving goals away. You know, that was accurate. You know, we're just giving goals away. He didn't name names, but that's the issue. So get off Emery's back on this one.
All right, on this one. I'm glad you said on this one, because we have a lot more coming, right? A quick comment from Hakon Larsson. This is not good enough. We don't create anything at all with our talent and have no clue what to do when we're defending. It's shambolic, and Emery is responsible. Our players do stupid shit, but we just cannot see past Emery anymore. So a quick comment there from Hakon. All right, so time to get back on the manager's back with this one. Sandeep says, every time Watford went on goal, I closed my eyes. I thought the third goal was coming for sure. Did you all feel this way? Ceballos was subbed because the weather was too hot for him to continue playing? Has the manager fucking lost it? Go on, Darren.
What do you want me to say? Come on, read some more out.
Well, defend the hot comment. I mean, what's going on there?
The hot comment was basically, it was a hot day yesterday. We need to freshen up our midfield. The fact that it came out, you know, the picture on Ceballos, because that's one of the three substitutions he made. It was a hot day. We were run ragged because we were shit, and we needed to freshen some legs in the midfield. I mean, we've all said we disagree with who and how and why he took off. You know, I can't defend him on that. But the hot comment was, again, it's taken out of context. It was a hot day yesterday. It was the hottest September day for years. And we were being run ragged, and he needed to bring on three midfielders to replace three tiring midfielders. You know, and it was hot.
Tony, you were there. Was it really that hot?
Look, it was hot for England for September. That is, I think Ceballos has probably played 70% of his games in hotter weather than this.
He didn't play for a year.
Well, it's still 70% of his games, doesn't...
What I'm saying is, you know, look, Ceballos has not got much minutes in the last year of football. You know, he is one that you're going to take off. The issue for me was he took both Ozil, you know, he put them both on to start, and he took them both off. That's where the nonsense is. He should have maybe played one of them and replaced one of them with the other one. You know, that should have been a plan.
All right, let's move on to the next question, because this is, you know, as hot in the air as the question seems to indicate. Tony, I'll go to you for this one. Safe to say Arsenal are still lacking the cojones in away matches, and once again, choke when we have the opportunities to get ahead of our top four rivals, says Vish. Is it the system that must change for Arsenal, or do you think it was just because of the international break?
System. The system, it's not like the system was wrong for one game. If you're Man City, you go, we don't change our system. They can blame the international break. They can blame a bit of luck. They can blame ABC, whatever. Our system's been wrong for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. I don't know. Since probably the Chelsea Cup final when we went 5 at the back. And when we went back to 4, we were pretty much shit again.
Yeah, like, as far as my memory stretches, yeah, I think that's probably when the curve jumped.
So while you're talking about memory, can you remember before the international break, we're 2-0 down at halftime through 2 mistakes again from our players, not our manager, and we turned it around and come back and drew 2-2 against Tottenham. You know, I didn't hear all the plaudits for Emery last week. Let's take this game in isolation.
Well, that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, that game, the North London Derby, for me at least, was an anomaly. And look, I'm not taking anything away from Emery or from the players for that matter for that game. We came onto the show and we praised the players and Emery for that matter. But you have to look at the bigger picture as well. You just said not too long ago that we're looking at the sample space of 5 games, so we have to look bigger. And that's exactly what we're trying to do here.
A lot of freak results in the Premier League.
Yeah, but it's not a freak result. That I would agree with you if we was Man City fans. If this was whatever the Man City end's called talk, then I would be completely in agreement with you. I've been to that ground so many times, I can't remember. Oh, the Bell End.
It's called the Bell End, yeah.
100%, it is actually called the Bell End. So if this was Bell End talk, which it is most weeks, then I would say, yes, there's freak results. But it's not, it's clock end talk, and this isn't a freak result. It happens fucking all the time. We've got 2 away wins in our last 10. One was against Watford via a slide tackle where we got battered for 90 minutes by 10 men and won with a tackle. And the other one was Newcastle in the first game of the season. But you can't tell me that this is the freak result. They're the freak result.
So we've lost one game away from home this year and that was away at the Champions of Europe. Yeah. Ask me again at Christmas.
All right, looks like he's going to keep defending Emery today. I don't think he's going to get off that. But let's move on to the next question because we have quite a few to go over here. Hakon Larsson. And this is actually a very good point. We went from not considering the opponent at all under Wenger to a man who seems to only care about the opponent. I mean, I'd rather see us just play our game than not at all, is what Hakon says. I don't even want to get into some of the players. He's too pissed off about that. But the question he says is, when did it become so hard to get your best 11 and give those players instructions depending on the opponent? I mean, what it boils down to, Tony, is he's saying that if you're really planning for the opponent that hard, how do you fuck it up this way? Because there were a string of errors, not just from the players, from the manager, as we spoke about.
I think that's part of the issue, and one of the reasons I think we don't have a style is because he's too reactive. And as I said, we went from the complete opposite with Wenger to what we are now, where we're basically only reactive, and then we're never going to have our own style. And I remember saying this not a few games, and that's unfair, but by literally Christmas last year, even when we was on our winning run, I remember saying that we are playing the other team, well, just to stop the other team rather than playing our game, and it was never going to be great long term, and it looks like that's proven to be the case. But in some ways, we can kind of say we made our bed, so now sleep in it, because we moaned when we had a style and we tried to impose that no matter what. And obviously, we wanted the healthy balance. We're at the other end of the scale at the moment, and we still want the healthy balance. Darren obviously believes that Emery's the man to get that. I absolutely don't.
No, let me just say, Darren doesn't believe that Emery's the man to do it, but Darren's given Emery the chance to, you know, fulfil his 2-year contract and see what he can do.
Do you think he's the... do you think he is? Or...
I think there's been... it's amazing, that list, when you look at who's left the club and who's joined the club in the last 20... You know, in the last 18 months. It's an incredible turnaround of personnel. And I want to... You know, you laughed earlier and said it's, you know, some people call it a project, but it is. I don't want to be Watford changing their managers every 6 months. I don't want to be Chelsea changing their managers all the time. Now, I'm not saying that we were right to keep our last manager for 22 years, but this guy has now got his own personnel this year. He's not quite got everyone available. And I want to see, I think, you know, we scored. Aubameyang scored. You know, we go get that third goal. I spoke to Schwinn at half time yesterday in that game, and Schwinn said to me, "Looks like we're going to be talking about an Arsenal victory." I didn't think so. What did I say, Schwinn? Next goal wins this.
Yep.
Because I really thought that we were abysmal yesterday, first half included. I thought the players just weren't up for it. They just weren't up for it. We were out fault to every ball yesterday. So that, you know, you can criticise our manager for that. For me, it was the players this time. The attitude on the field wasn't good enough. But my belief is that we've given this guy a 2-year contract, and there are some incredibly exciting players. We've got a great squad. We've got enough midfielders that we can cope with a couple of injuries. We've got enough strikers that we can cope with a couple of injuries. And when we get our defenders back, the same hopefully will happen there. I'm still excited by this season. I think it's a very tough Premier League. Spurs have lost home to Newcastle. Chelsea have lost Jordan at home to Villa. City lose at Norwich. You know, and we're battered at Norwich.
Back to my point, do you believe that Emery is the man to find the balance between proactive and reactive?
And let's pause there, because the next question is exactly this. I mean, I'm going to tailor it a bit just to fit the conversation. MW Gunner asks, I mean, how likely is the club giving Emery a contract if he gets top four? So, A, will he make top four, in your opinion? And do you think, based on wherever we finish, he gets a new contract? Go on, Darren.
I think, yes, I still believe we're going to finish top four. I mean, it's not easy, you know, and that's crystal ball time when you're guessing that. You don't know what's going to happen this season. I think it's going to be very tough because the Premier League is very tough. I think there will be, if he doesn't reach top four or qualify for the Champions League through the Europa League, he certainly won't get an extension. But I think if he does finish in the top four, if we're not playing to a certain style that the club wants, I don't think we'll get a new contract. I am just still hopeful that by Christmas we will have seen, we're going to batter someone soon. We're going to batter someone 4 or 5, and the confidence might just get back into that side. So I'm hopeful. I've said it a couple of times on this podcast, ask me again at Christmas, because I think we're going to be there or thereabouts at Christmas, and by then hopefully we'll be seeing some signs. But if we get to the end of the season and we're still not seeing any progression over that 2-year period, then no, that's for us to look for a new manager. It's not now, 5 games into the season.
Tony, top 4 prospects, and do you boot him? Say thank you very much, but bye-bye now.
I think my comment to you after the game, well, I was actually sent it to someone else, but I forwarded it to you, was I would sack him, bring him back into the office and tell him I made a mistake, and then sack him again just to piss him off. Look, I was so confident going into this season we'd get top four. I don't think we've played well yet. Like, literally, we've had every sample of games. Okay, Liverpool, you don't expect to play well. Tottenham's a bit different. It's a derby at home. There's more pressure. There's more intensity. So it's a slightly different game. Burnley at home are a team that should let you play. Watford away are a team with not much energy and, I mean, sorry, with loads of energy but not much quality. Newcastle are a team that are going to defend and let you do whatever you want. And in none of them situations we've looked good. For me, that is a very, very worrying sign. I mean, Darren says he thinks we're going to absolutely dick someone soon. I don't see how, because we're not creating anything. It's not like we're pulling teams apart, and a lot of times in the Wenger years we'd batter teams and lose 1-0 and we'd be the ones having 30 shots. As yesterday, you look at the chance, even you could go back throughout the whole season so far and look at chances actually made. As I said, I think there was 2 at Newcastle, with Mkhitaryan missed one and Aubameyang scored one. Burnley, I don't think there was anything you'd say is a bad miss. Again, there was 2 against Liverpool. Tottenham, none. Yesterday, arguably the Aubameyang one. That's less than 10 goal-scoring chances in 5 games. It's just, that's one, unsustainable, and 2, not good enough.
I have to agree. I don't think he's the right man for the job. Let's move on. And I'll stick with you, Tony, for this one. Hakon Larsen says, by the way, Watford's first goal should have been disallowed. I think Dale Lefeu was inside the box as the goal kick was being taken. Does VAR check those things?
It's meant to, but, I mean, it's one of them. It is kind of semi-subjective because it had absolutely no bearing on what happened.
No. It's not subjective. The guy who intercepted the ball from the goalkeeper, from Socrates' pass out.
I'm talking about the penalty.
Yeah, that's not the one. It was the.
Sorry. You're right. I don't know if the AR checks that. They check every goal, but I don't know if they check every rule within the goal. Sorry, I was talking about the penalty because I think someone's had half a toenail in the box of the penalty as well. But.
You're right, they're subjective decisions. I thought this was a strange one. I did read somewhere this morning that the VAR system went down in the second half. Somebody was just joking.
I saw that in the group chat when I came out of the ground, and I thought someone was just bantering, the VAR is obviously not working. But somewhere else, maybe that was true.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, I hoped we were going to get through a week without talking about XG or VAR, and we're now doing both. But
not in my house.
Absolutely, it was black and white. What are they checking in that goal? It's a kick from a dead ball situation where there is black and white rules that the attackers are not allowed in the area, and he was in the area. It should have been disallowed. I don't know. And it's not like it was, you know, they're going with the referee on this one. It was something the referee didn't see. And therefore, it should have been disallowed. It doesn't matter because they deserved the goal. They battered us, not giving any defence to us on yesterday's performance. But the goal shouldn't have stood.
Hard to disagree. I'm with you guys there. Back to you, Darren, because you're back on Emery. Why exactly are the same mistakes being committed, says Halls of Marble. Emery surely now is on his last legs. No manager in any organizational setting doesn't correct subordinates making errors. We have not changed since Arsene Wenger left.
Yeah, but this isn't like an accountancy firm where somebody's added up the column of figures wrong every week. You know, it's a game where highly paid professional individuals are making schoolboy errors. I don't see how you can blame the manager on it. I really don't. What's he going to do? Say to Louise, stop giving away fucking penalties, you cunt. You know what I mean? Please, I hope he is saying it in whatever language they speak. I'm sure Aubameyang's comments today, I'm sure in that dressing room yesterday, Luis and Socrates were sitting in a corner and everyone was giving them daggers. You know, you can't keep giving away these mistakes, but you can't blame the manager for those individual errors.
Tony, you want to say something on that?
I don't know if this has come up in the questions, but did any of you see the stat that David Luiz hasn't given away a penalty since 2011?
Three penalties in 160 games for Chelsea, 2 and 5 for us.
Yeah, he's a perfect Arsenal player, isn't he? He is. When we signed him, he's a perfect Arsenal player. Skillful on the ball, good first touch.
But
got
doesn't
a great
it screen to your system when he's given away the same amount in 4 games as he did in 160 before that?
Well, I think that's one of the things where we've been sitting back and allowing teams to come onto us, is because goals against us over the last 3-4 years have been with teams running at us through the middle, and we seem to have tried to address that by us, you know, putting more in the midfield, putting more sitting, you know, not just one but two or even three sitting in front of the back four. But it's still that issue when they get through that line and they run at us, we just haven't got a clue how to handle that.
All right, let's move on and let's job done then, I suppose. We don't have too much time here, so we'll have to skip a few, I'm afraid, but let's get some of these out of the park. Brads says, Tony, we have to be one of the worst clubs in the league when we don't have the ball. Why is it so hard for the manager to get these players to press and keep them organized? We really need a defensive coach, because this is very frustrating to see.
Yeah, I mean, he started obviously trying to press high, people getting in behind us all the time, and then since it's sort of like we've abandoned any sort of defensive system and setup, and it's just kind of been. They had a chance yesterday. I can't remember how it ended, where Guendouzi was obviously on the right of the midfield, whatever you want to call it, a diamond or a midfield three, whatever you want to call it. He was clearly on the right of it, and he, for some reason, was pressing over in the left. They got out of the press and switched the ball, and Delafeu had absolutely acres, and they had a chance. I can't remember if Leno made a good save or whatever happened. And it seems like our defensive system is just sort of ad hoc. It's just sort of, well, if you're near somewhere, kind of try and deal with it. But there's no shape or system. I mean, again, bringing Torreira on the right again, it's just, I honestly think the Torreira one was like, oh, you've got a bit of an engine, go on the right, because then you can run up and down a bit, whereas if you're in the middle, you kind of have to sit. And it literally seems that that's how our defensive structure is set up. I mean, you said yesterday that it feels like some of his decisions would have been better that if he just rolled dice. And I said to you that he has done that in the past. And
that was scandalous. I mean, I don't know if our listeners know about this, but if you want to just quickly touch upon that.
Yeah, so I was watching a sports quiz program the other day, and it was like they had three options. What person does this? What person does that? And what person made decisions by rolling dice? And Emery was one of the options, and I thought, it can't be a football manager. It must be, you know, someone else for something else. So someone rolls dice for what they have for dinner. And then Emery was the answer. That it was Emery that rolls dice to make decisions. And again, I thought, okay, maybe he chose dinner one day and it's the press being the press. So I went and researched it. And he actively made team selections in La Liga, not for his son's under-8 team, if he has an under-8-year-old son. In La Liga, he actively made decisions by rolling dice. The thing is, the stories that highlight this are actually like really positive, like, oh, look how new age he is. Fuck off. He rolled dice. I can't... How this isn't known is unbelievable. Like, I can be a manager. I've got dice. Literally, give me the job. I'll roll dice all day for however much he's on, 60 grand a week, 100 grand a week, whatever it is. I'll roll dice all day.
It's shocking. I mean, I read that article, and, you know, you have former players. I think it was Felipe Melo who came out and said that this is how he did it. And, of course, as you said, there was a positive spin on it, that the game was so system-based under Emery that he could basically pick up a player and throw him into a different position, or, as you said, just completely randomize it. But the issue remains that we still don't have a clear-cut system that, you know, forget rolling dice to select the players. It seems like Emery's rolling the dice to select a system, and that, to me, is a big red flag. I'll just quickly go over some comments before we go to the last one, which I think will require some deliberation. Gunner J says, I'm really not sure I can stomach another season of going to Wolves, Leicester, and now Watford, like it's the Camp Nou. Josh says, I've been in the give Emery time camp, but that performance was inexcusable. None of the players looked like they knew what they were doing and where they were supposed to be, and the subs just didn't make sense to me. Even in the first half, I was yelling at my TV, and I never do that. So, thank you very much for your questions, everyone. I'm sorry if I missed out on someone. The last question, and I think this will require some conversation, is from Anthony Shepherd. And I'll start with you, Tony, because I think we know Darren's answer to this. Honestly, would you take Mourinho right now? No improvement under Emery, and defensively worse. 18 months in the job he's had. Not good enough for me. Sorry. New coach, please. Just to add, anyone else than Mourinho? Should we look across North London, where another manager doesn't seem to be very happy with what's going on?
The thing is with Mourinho, and I was talking to someone in a group chat last night, do I think he would improve us? Yes. Do I want him in a club? No. And the fan base, and our fan base, is not the best, as I highlighted earlier. Literally, as soon as we scored nil in one game, or if two games in a row, it would be banners and aeroplanes and all that shit. And just his reputation, how toxic he is. He'd ruin the squad within 2 years, as he does, but probably get half decent results in them 2 years. So Mourinho, not for me. There is many others I would take. I actually had an interesting conversation about Rafa Benitez, and 2 weeks ago I'd have laughed at someone that said that. And people always go on about his negative approach, but barring Real Madrid, where it's basically a poison chalice, he's actually done what he needed with that team. You can't say his Liverpool team with Gerrard and Torres was negative. And I think they only lost one game the season they came second and probably should have won the league. At Newcastle, he was negative because that's what he had to do. But then when they went down to the Championship, they were the top scorers again. Suddenly they come back up. Dwight Gayle's not going to get you 30 goals a year. So he has to go back to doing what he has to do. I don't think he would be a horrendous choice. He went in at Chelsea, everyone hated him, and he won one or two cups. I don't think that would be a horrendous choice. Pochettino, I don't think he's gettable. He may be unhappy, but would I take him 100%? And I can't see any reason why you wouldn't, but he's not gettable. It's like saying, would I take Guardiola or Klopp? They're just not realistic. But there's a long list. I would take Nagelsmann. There's a lot. I mean, outside, I would take Hasenhüttl. they at least they've got a way, and you know what they're going to do, and they're grinding out results with teams that aren't as good as the results they're getting, really. But their system and their planning gets them where they need to be. So I think there's quite a long list of people. I mean, Allegri, I think, would be people's favourite. I think there's a long list of people. Well, for me, there is a long list of people that I would take over Emery.
Just before I go to you, Darren, the Red Custodian says, are you desperate enough to get rid of Mourinho, to get rid of Emery, if that means Freddie takes over?
Is that a question for me?
Tony, well, sorry. Let's go to Tony, then we'll come to you.
I don't think Freddie's ready. And that's where someone like, sorry, when I mentioned Benitez, that was kind of the context of the conversation we was having, that if you need someone for the next 6 months or whatever it is, 7 months, and then maybe they could do another year if you still don't feel Freddie's ready, then that person would be Benitez. When you're talking about a Nagelsmann or an Allegri, they're a four-year contract kind of guy. So it depends what you're looking to do. But I think if you're looking for a short term for Freddie, I think it would be someone like a Benitez.
So, Darren, let's say you keep going on about Christmas, right? Let's say come Christmas time, we're a few points adrift, not too many, 4, 5, 6, take your pick, from the top four. What are you still with Emery at that point?
I mean, look, let's get something straight here. I'm supporting Emery. There's a couple of reasons. One, I just think that sometimes, you know, one terrible performance and suddenly everything's wrong and we throw all our toys out of the pram. I'm not 100% happy with Emery. I would have liked to seen us be better than we are. I thought the end of last season was disgraceful, the way we threw away an incredible opportunity to finish third. You know, I'm defending him to a certain extent because I just don't like the fact that everyone's on his back this morning. I didn't read a single positive comment. And I do like to play devil's advocate. You know, I do. I think it makes... I've hosted a podcast myself for years, and sometimes when everything is so critical, I find myself just as a man standing up for him. I'm not particularly happy. I've said Christmas, and if things aren't looking, if we're not seeing any signs by Christmas, and if there's someone better available, then yes, I'm not adverse to making that change. I used to have a very good source at Arsenal who told me, it was the year before last, it was when Wenger was given one more year, I think, a deal with Allegri was on the table. It was from Ken Fryer, I think, was the source. That the deal was there and he was going to join us. I would have put my house on it because the information was so good. So I think there is very much a link there with Allegri. And I think if he's still available at Christmas and there isn't a good sign of things improving, then yes, let's make the change. And we are Arsenal Football Club and we can attract the best names in the world.
I must say I'm a bit surprised by that because I remember you mentioning that you had this info on who was going to make it. And I remember you telling me that it was Allegri. So let's see how things unfold over there. For now, I think we can probably move on. We're done with pretty much all the questions. The remaining ones are repetitive, so apologies once again. Right before we go, we have a midweek fixture, and we're back in the Europa League, those glamorous Thursday nights. And we will be traveling to Frankfurt to play Eintracht Frankfurt, who, of course, did very well last year, but they have lost Jovic. They've lost Sebastian Haller this season, so it'll be interesting to see how we fare. Tony, will you be making the trip?
No. As I said I'm a hypocrite. I'll say that before I start. But as I said last season, I'm not spending any unnecessary money on the Europa League this year, not because of the competition, but the way the final was treated was a glorified friendly. It reminded me of the idea of the 39th game being in America or somewhere around the world that was proposed a few years ago. So I said at the time that any unnecessary money, I am absolutely a hypocrite. If we get to the final, I will almost certainly be going. So don't come on in 6-7 months and label that. I know, but no, it's completely unnecessary money. And it's not a financial thing. As I said, it's just more the disgust of the competition.
Fair enough. Fair enough. What sort of team do you expect for the day? And I mean, keeping in mind, we have Aston Villa this coming Sunday. Do you think we rest up a few players, or based on yesterday's result, we go full tilt and try and get the fans back on board a bit?
I said as soon as the draw was made, and I'm not sure if it was to you or in the group chat or even on Twitter, I think we go strong against them. Maybe not 100%, but I think we go strong because it's by far and away the hardest game in the group. And if you beat, if you go there and win, you can have this group done by, I think it's the 3rd of November. No, that's a Sunday. I think it's the 5th of November, sorry. Or somewhere around then, 7th, whatever, first week in November, you can have the group done, which gives you two fixtures that you can completely bomb off. One is Liège away, and the other one is a home one against Frankfurt, sorry. So if you win this, you can get 12 points, and then you won the group. So I think he goes strongish, especially, as I said, they're the best team in the group after us. Does he go 100%? No, probably not, because when I say strongest, I mean, I think Willock and Nelson will probably play. Chambers will play with one of the centre-backs. I think Maitland-Niles has to play. Kolasinac almost has to play. Torreira probably comes in, but a lot stronger than the Europa League teams we've seen in the groups last year, but not 100%.
Do you agree, Darren? And do you think Leno stays in goal, or does Martinez come in?
Yeah, I don't know if you can hear me okay.
Yeah, you're coming through just about fine.
I think he can rest Leno. I think it's a big, yeah, okay. It's an interesting one, because it's the toughest game in the group first. You win that one and everything looks quite easy from there, or it should be quite easy. But I think we've got a big squad, so I think there's quite a lot of players who can come back in naturally. As we said, we've got plenty in midfield that can play. I would play Ozil, give him some more minutes in his legs. It's maybe a good chance to see Martinelli up front, rest Aubameyang for the weekend. I think there's enough there. Looking forward to it.
Quick prediction.
The joy of football, isn't it? It's the joy of football. I'm so depressed, and yet we're playing Thursday night. 5-0.
5-0. Well, I'm not going to bother Tony with a prediction, because we all know what goes on there. Just quickly before we go, a quick prediction for Aston Villa as well, Darren, because we won't be meeting after Frankfurt.
5-0
yet again. Lovely. So there we go. Basically a 10-0 prediction from Darren spread over two games. So I think that wraps us up, boys.
Can I just mention? Sorry.
Go on.
I was just going to say, I made a schoolboy error this week. My wife wanted to book a week away, so I let her book it without looking at the fixtures. So I'm not going to be here for the Villa game. I'll be in Italy. What a cunt! I didn't even think. Two international breaks, and I let her book it when we got a home match.
Well, if anyone is maybe wanting Darren's ticket, if it's still available, of course, I'm not being presumptuous here, then reach out and maybe we can hook you up. As always, we're available at clockin_talk, and Tony does get games, tickets for away games as well. So don't hesitate. Get in touch. Anything else before we go, boys?
Yeah, just quickly, and I think we should finish the show the way we started it, really, and talk about Tez. While we've been, I've tweeted a few people, as did you, and one of them, and I'm quite moved, really, is, look, everyone that listens knows Tez's Italian team is Roma, and I tweeted them saying that can we get some support, a retweet, anything. He is a big Roma fan, and AS Roma English, who have got nearly 500,000 followers, have tweeted a picture of Tez with what I presume is his wife. Obviously, I don't know Tez outside the podcast, so I don't know if it's his wife, and said we have some fun with our Arsenal support in followers yesterday, but on a more serious note, we're shocked to hear Australian Arsenal and Roma fan Guna Tez is in a coma after collapsing and is now fighting for his life. More details on his GoFundMe for his family, and I've tweeted the link. It's got 50 retweets as I speak, and I assume it will continue to go up. So again, we spoke about earlier how the football world can unite, and again, because of Mkhitaryan scoring yesterday, there was a bit of back and forth between Arsenal and Roma yesterday, fans, but that's real nice to see.
That's fantastic. That's proper class from AS Roma. So quick shout out to them. Thank you very much, guys. And yes, we've been recording, we've really gone quite a mile with this fundraiser that his family have started for him. But don't let that stop you from, you know, contributing in any which way you seem worthy, whether it's, you know, a small donation. We're seeing all sorts of donations coming in, all the way from, you know, $2, $3 to $1,500 that I saw recently. So anything that you can offer, whether even if it's a simple prayer, it's always welcome. And, every listener knows Tez is quite a character. He's very charismatic, and let's hope we have him back on the show very, very soon. So thank you everyone for getting involved. All right, boys, thank you very much. Thank you, Darren.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
As always, a pleasure. And Tony, you're always here, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you, and we'll be back after Arsenal 10, Aston Villa 0.